The remarks really join the 22nd and the 23rd kina. The 22nd kina has an aspect to it which clearly, as I said, the authorship is not known, the place is not known, but the time in which it was written is very clear. This kina has written events involving the First Crusade, Masat Slava Rishon. And at the time of the First Crusade, the Shaila, which is discussed in this kina, was a very significant Shaila, which was much debated for a number of generations. And that is, there are two questions that they faced. Number one, if their children were to face forced conversion, should they take their lives rather than allow them to be converted? And the second issue was, in the face of torture, should they take their lives? These were the two issues. The first of these issues, particularly the one of the conversions, was discussed particularly at this time, in this era of Masat Slav, of the First Crusade. And there were varied opinions. There were those of the early Balei HaTosfos, in fact, that paskin that they should, in fact, what is described in this kina, that they actually took the lives of their own children and their own families before they killed themselves. There were those among the Balei HaTosfos, in fact, that had this particular view, and obviously this community followed that particular view. The Yamsha Shloimei in Perak HaChovel, Siman Nun Tes, also discusses this issue in his own conclusion that he comes to, which seems to be in the sources that we have, that the general consensus of the Balei HaTosfos was in fact that this was improper, that they should not in fact take the lives of the children, and for more than one reason. Number one, life we should live in the hands of the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. We should not, if they're anusim, if they're forced, they're certainly not guilty of sin, so what's the point of doing this? And secondly, we never know in life what exactly is to take place. One of the incidents, in fact, in one of the communities that's described where this took place is after they took the lives of their families, ultimately the gzera was rescinded. And it was nullified, in fact. So that's one of the cautionary aspects that we have to have, is that we've lived under very harsh circumstances for thousands of years. When a tzara begins and when it ends, we never know. And we merit sometimes almost miraculous salvation, that overnight things change very rapidly in a positive direction. So this is a very poignant point, the discussion that takes place in a Chof Beis and what they actually did. And the question about taking one's life under the threat of torture, this already is discussed in the Medrash and Parshas Noach, and the very takes in the Rishonim on it, which revolve around the incident with Shaul HaMelech as it was about to fall to the Plishtim, and he takes his own life, what his justification for it was. And this has been much debated in Jewish history. It was debated in the Rishonim. Yosefus tells us that in Mitzada, before they took their lives, they in fact had the very same debate how to understand what had taken place with Shaul HaMelech, if it was appropriate, inappropriate, why he did it, if it was the halacha allowed him to do it, that this debate actually took place on Mitzara. And what always causes me to tremble, that a people that has an entire literature and debated over centuries of what to do with such crises, and this was not just academic discussions, but in real time, as these issues unfolded, it's a very frightening history. People that has an entire literature of how to deal with forced conversions and the threat of torture. And it's a topic that we visited again and again and again throughout our history. It speaks of the tragedies of Jewish history. But there's another aspect to the 22nd and the 23rd kina, and that's why I combine them. The 22nd kina is almost unique in the kinas in its descriptions, in fact, of how the lives of the people were taken. Most of the descriptions in most of the Kinnas are in a global sense. They talk about they came, the enemy came, people were killed, we were driven into Golis, etc. But the nasty details are usually not mentioned. Kinnah Chav Beis is almost unique in the sense of how it mentions. It talks about the fats of their bodies were mixed together with their waists, so they broke their necks. Very, very descriptive in a very, very gruesome fashion. The Novi in Yirmiyah, in the sixth parak in Yirmiyah, talks about the Rabbanu Yirmiyah tells them, when the Churban will come, Evil Yochid Asiloch. The evil that you will experience is not a global mourning, but rather an evil, the mourning for the loss of your oldest and most cherished son. Evil Yochid Asiloch. We can look at a Holocaust, 6 million people died. And in a national sense, it's an awesome tragedy. And yet we can look at it that way, and we can't connect with it, because how can we connect with 6 million people? But Evel Yochid Asiloch, as Rav Chatzko Sarno, Zechona Lebrocha, wrote in his Lias Yecheskel, Evel Yochid, to focus, to look at the individual, to see what took place in the life of a Yochid, that's already a very different story. That we can relate to very, very well, and brings forth the poignancy, the anguish, and the suffering which took place. And that we have in Kinnah Chav Beis, and it's very, very gruesome descriptions. And we have it again in Kinnah Chav Gimel. Kinnah Chav Gimel, as in Chazal, the story is in more than one form, and more than one time and place, but the story is basically the same. Here we have the children of Rabbi Yishmael Kohen Gadol, and they're taken into captivity, they're sold as slaves, and the masters wish them to marry to each other, and each one feels it's inappropriate that as a child of the Kohen Gadol that they should marry a non-Jew, and they discover each other in the morning, this is brother and sister, and how they perish and embrace with each other. Evel Yochid Asiloch, the suffering of the individual. We talk in most of the Kinnas, Klal Yisrael, what's happened to us, the destruction of the Migdash, the destruction of our sovereignty, etc. Here, Rav Soloveitchik says, Evel Yochid Asiloch, the story of two people. In the midst of all the millions that suffered in the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, but Evel Yochid Asiloch, let us focus on two. And one of the things, one of the tragedies in Evel Yochid, it's come very, very much to the fore to me this year. And I know in Project Witness, in fact, they put out a video where they interviewed a number of child survivors of the Holocaust that had been hidden during the Holocaust and that somehow managed to survive in monasteries and other places in their stories. And I want to share two with you that I've come across, one personally and one in my readings. It's an aspect, the children, the Jewish children that were lost in the Holocaust, even that survived, but were no longer returned perhaps to the Jewish people, no longer found their place in the Jewish people. There was a man, I believe, from Petah Tikva, if I recall correctly, and he needed to undergo surgery in Columbia Presbyterian. He came from Eretz Yisrael. So he had one of his neighbors, a friend of his, a Rav, accompanied him to be with him. He had no family here in the United States. So he came to accompany him, to assist him in the time that he would have to be in the hospital here. So they came, they examined him in Columbia Presbyterian, and they told him, whatever, he has a serious condition, and has to be very, very careful to move as little as possible, and they hospitalized him. He was one of the upper floors, I don't know, there's 10, 15 floors or so in the hospital, it was one of the upper floors of the hospital. And all of a sudden, Friday night, they came, and they decided that they have to do some more tests on him. And they took him down from the upper floors to two floors below ground level, where the department, the x-ray department was. So the Rav from Eretz Yisrael goes with him, or the Balabas from Eretz Yisrael goes with him, and he comes, and as they're waiting to be taken for an x-ray, another stretcher was wheeled in to that department. And there's a woman there, and she sees a man with a bed, and she starts speaking to him in Yiddish, and she says good Shabbos to him, an elderly woman. So she realizes that she's Jewish. He starts to speak to her. So the chayla, the one from Eretz Yisrael, says, you know, upstairs in the room, on the 10th to 12th floor, somewhere's way up there, we prepared before Shabbos chalas and wine. And I'm sure this lady didn't hear Kiddush yet. So could you go upstairs and bring down the wine to make Kiddush for her? So he was rather reluctant. He didn't want to take the elevator, and to march up to 10, 15 floors and back down 10, 15 floors wasn't too easy, and the problems of getting around the hospital with its security. But he finally decides to do it, and without all the details, he succeeds almost b'derech nes in getting up to the room and getting back downstairs. He comes downstairs, makes Kiddush for the woman. She answers Amen, and she tells him, this is the first time in 50 years that I've answered Amen. I was hidden among non-Jews during the war, and I lived the rest of my life separated from Klal Yisrael. I haven't heard Kiddush, I haven't had a bracha, I haven't said Amen in 50 years. Today is the first time in 50 years that I heard Kiddush and said Amen. He went off with this fellow to do his x-rays, and he comes back. But no, the woman's not there anymore. So he asks about her, and she expired when he went in for the x-rays. And he realized the Medrash says that a person that answers Amen, they open the doors of Gan Eden for them. A child torn away from Klal Yisrael, to live an entire life away from Klal Yisrael. Evel Yocher Asiloch. This is the tragedies of the Holocaust. And I'll share one more with you, which is one that I know personally. There's a health-related facility that's 10 minutes away from here, which I go from time to time to visit certain people. And because of that, I intend to know the staff in this facility. And there's a woman there. Her name is Julie. And Julie is a poster child for the Polish embassy. If you wanted to put up a picture of a Polish citizen, a Polish Catholic living in a Polish neighborhood, attending a Polish Catholic church, speaking Polish, Julie is the poster child. You'd hang her on the wall, on the outdoor wall of the Polish embassy. She's a poster child. So one year, it's December, and I walk in. She works in the dietary department, and I see her there. And I say, Julie, happy holiday to you. It's December. She says, Rabbi, happy Hanukkah to you. And I was floored. Where in the world? She doesn't live with Jews. She has no connection with Jews whatsoever. I've met her husband. Where in the world does she know about Hanukkah from? Like, he'll tell me that I know what the Baha'i religion, what it celebrates, its holidays, you know. So I turned and said, Julie, how do you know about the Jewish holidays? So she says, Rabbi, I have to tell you, my mother is Jewish. My mother is Polish. And she was hidden in the Holocaust by a family with a Polish family. She survived the Holocaust with them as a teenager. And she fell in love with one of their sons, and she married him after the war. And that's my father and my mother. My father's a Polish Catholic, my mother's Jewish. You look at Julie, you would never know that she's Jewish, al pi din. No, so she totally lost and removed from Klal Yisrael her children, Polish Catholics. She came to me a couple of years later, I saw her, and she asked me a favor of me, which I was more than glad to do. Her mother wanted to file for reparations against Germany for what she'd suffered in the Holocaust. And she needed certain information for an affidavit. If you're familiar that from many of the communities in Europe, there are Yiddish history books that have been written by survivors describing what the town was about, etc. So she needed a couple of pages of this Yiddish book translated to be put into the affidavit. So Julie asked me if I would do it. I was more than glad to assist her mother, and I made a translation for her to enter into her affidavit for reparations. But Evel Yocher Asiloch. The world is so complex, not only of the ones that died, but of the ones that have lived. And how they were separated and isolated from Klal Yisrael and could not find their way back to their own roots. That's what we describe in the 23rd Kiddush.